Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload an episode to that once a week, usually, sometimes twice a week, sometimes once every 2 weeks, but most of the time about once a week. And then also, the most efficient way to get my show is to enter the iTunes search engine and enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul, which was my username when I first fell in love with kickboxing. I'm riding solo today. You know, normally I have a big show for you guys, but a lot of things going on in the writing world with MMA and so on, so the my normal co-host of Pat Wyman and Dave Walsh were very busy this week. One of them was moving, and I just wasn't able to get the same crew together. So I'm going solo, which is what you guys are used to. But I'm going to go ahead and break down two fight cards in particular. I'm going to break down the Glory Kickboxing card, of course, which is the big one going down tomorrow. And I'm also going to break down the Legacy second edition of their kickboxing card. I'll go ahead and start on the Legacy card. Had some good stuff in it. It was a solid crowd, I thought, considering, you know, it's something that they're trying to get up and going. They had some MMA fights in the undercard, and there was mention that this might be a dual MMA kickboxing down the road, because the guy who, Mick Mander, put it together, he said he really likes the look of MMA in a cage, or in a ring, but, like, I really think that, all in all, the effort to go into kickboxing and put on kickboxing fights has been really, really good, and I like that this card did decent, you know, sold decent, because they had a couple of local guys, and that's why, if you guys noticed the layout of the card, there might be some names that you were familiar with, and then some names that you weren't familiar with that were kind of at the top of the card, and there was a reason for it. There's a reason, because Justin Johnson's from the area. He says he's going to sell tickets. Andrea Lee is one person that I recommended to the company the moment they're going in this area. When they had her on the card, I was like, that's a win, because Andrea Lee's a draw in the area. So Shreveport, I thought, is, you know, because of the casino they got, I thought they did a good job putting together this show, and I thought that the fights were, for the most part, entertaining. I won't talk about them all, but I am going to talk about most of them. I'll go ahead and start off with George Pacoraria, as he got a victory over Tommy Diekman. I know George. I've worked with George before. I've held pads for George. I've wrapped his hands in the back for MMA events, you know, in the area, and I thought that Tommy Diekman won a close decision. I thought it was close. Now, this isn't one where I was like, man, I'm so against George, you know, or man, I'm so in favor of Tommy. I thought the fight was close. I thought that George, who was just a monster in comparison to Tommy Diekman, who looked like he was better suited at fighting at, you know, 130 pounds or less, he would throw his combinations and his kicks, and he'd get them going every once in a while, but for the most part, he couldn't hurt George. So George would take his shots. Whenever George would throw something spinning or something like that, you know, with his kicks or something flashy, for the most part, George was just looking to be active, looking to throw offense, but he didn't really score consistently throughout like Tommy Diekman threw consistently throughout. Tommy Diekman had a pretty good low kick whip. He had a pretty good combination flow when he got it going. But George was just so big and strong that he couldn't hurt him with anything. So when George threw and when George put together his own offense, he's able to keep Tommy Diekman from, you know, staying in the pocket the way Tommy would like to. Like, if they're both exchanging, George would throw something that didn't necessarily hurt Tommy, but, you know, got him off balance, got him out of his kickboxing flow. It was close. It was a really close decision. And I did think that Tommy Diekman won the fight, but I can see how George could have won it, because when George scored, they were pretty significant, and he's such a big guy. You know, I thought that the fight was close enough for it to go either way, but I did think Tommy won, and I am happy that George got the win. He's a good guy. He's trying to fight everything, because he, you know, fights MMA. He's trying to do boxing. He's trying to do everything just to be a consistent prize fighter, and sometimes that's what you got to do until you get a bigger opportunity. So shout out to George, and shout out to Tommy Diekman. Good stuff. Good performance. Bruno Carvalho is a guy who they said was, you know, 30-something and 0, a whole bunch of KOs. He gets KO over Dustin Johnson here. Overhand right and a left hook. He scored it down like early in that round. Kind of caught him like as Heath Johnson was kind of moving away. He caught him and he scored the stoppage in the corner. Just two different levels of fighter. I think Dustin Johnson was game. I think he wanted to fight. I thought that, you know, he looked like he was prepared for it. But I think the moment the fight started and he didn't get into his offensive flow right away, those gaps that you have, those gaps of spacing for people who do MMA and you try to go into kickboxing, the most important thing for you to understand is you can't allow the gaps that you allow in MMA. In MMA, there can be literally 20, 25, 30-second pockets where both guys are standing in front of each other, measuring, moving, and no serious offense is coming. You know, like it's crazy how that works. You know, it's crazy how that plays out. But I really think, you know, as I, you know, break down this card, as I look at what's going on, I'm really happy that Carvalho's getting this opportunity to fight and get on TV, despite the fact that Dustin Johnson wasn't the opposition that he's going to need if he's going to move forward in the sport. I thought Dustin was, you know, serviceable as a platform for Bruno, and Bruno got on this card because they've got that Brazilian TV deal. But now it's time for you to test Bruno. You know, maybe he goes up in weight, meets Francis Ambong, or maybe he stays there. They bring him somebody legit around that. I think these guys fought at like 160 pounds. I can't remember exactly what it was. But I need to see more from Bruno Carvalho, because this fight, though, was a KO victory, didn't show me enough to say, okay, this is how you're going to do against the best kickboxers in the world. Brian Collette is doing what Brian Collette does. He got a big-time head kick KO over Luther Smith. Brian Collette's got, there are people, Duke Rufus, I remember he said to me years ago when I trained at Duke Rufus's gym a little bit, he said, there's such a thing as a head kick guy, you know, because it's, there are people who just are good at finding that shot. And a lot of my students always, you know, make fun or have fun with the fact that I'm really good at scoring high kicks, and they go, comes out of nowhere. And I just think there are people who just have the knack for understanding how to snap the leg, how to get it up there, how to read your defense. There are people who have that ability. Brian Collette is one of those people. Whether he is in the clinch and he pulls your arm away and he drops his head and he shoots the, you know, almost rainbow-esque head kick over the top, whether he just shoots it when you're in the offensive exchange, whether he reads your defense, Brian Collette's right leg coming up high is brutal stuff. And he scored two head kick downs. You know, first a head kick, and then he got the head kick down, then he got the head kick finish. Brian Collette's a monster. He has all the athleticism and the strength and power to be one of the best kickboxers in the world. Like he's got those tools. He just needs to kickbox. He needs to get a lot of opportunities to get into that offensive flow. Combination kick. He needs to put those things together. And that's kind of working against him in terms of these kind of fights are good to build in that direction, but he's got to get himself that international opposition. That's the only thing he's missing, because he's got the offensive tools, but he needs to travel. He needs to, maybe he goes out and it wouldn't be a bad idea for him to, you know, look into a super combat, because Brian Collette, I'm telling you, there's when I'm looking at him, I'm seeing every offensive tool. Like I'm seeing, you know, all the skill sets that it would take to make it in the sport. He just got to get his kickboxing flow down. And that's how, you know, Justin Jacoby was able to beat him, because I thought that he was able to, you know, he sat on power too much. Justin Jacoby stopped him in the first one. But in the second fight, that was a kickboxing match for three rounds. And he wasn't able to find his range consistently with offense. And I thought that he'd gotten better at points during the fight. I thought that with Myron Dennis, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, I thought Myron Dennis did a great job kickboxing flow against him round one. And I thought Brian Collette got his kickboxing flow going round two and then round three. It's just, if he can get more performances like that where he can put all his tools together, he's going to have a really good international kickboxing career. But he's got to get more international kickboxing fights. This is a good one for him. And there's a tournament, so he's going to get the total fights that he's going to need to move his career this year. But the thing that he's missing, that really, really important thing that he is missing, is he needs international opposition so that he knows where he stands. Myron Dennis, as I told you guys before, Myron Dennis has trained with me. He trained with me before this fight. So last week when I did the show, I wasn't able to give a prediction because, you know, I don't think that that's professional. I think that's unfair, especially considering I do the podcast. So now the fight's happening. I can break down the fight as I saw it. And I actually thought round one, Warren Thompson did a good job of throwing with power. And I thought that his combinations were pretty strong. When he would throw, he would, you know, his combination of low kick, he threw them really, really strong. He threw his hands strong. But I thought that Myron did a good job of checking the low kicks. And I thought that he did a good job of just slowly wearing on his low kick game. It was a very patient game. Myron's game plan for this fight was kind of built on a three-round understanding of, okay, I've got 3 rounds to get this finished. I'm going to put away, invest some work in round one, and then I'm going to build on it in 2 and 3 and get the W. That is how kickboxing looks at its highest. If you don't get that smooth KO, you want to build on something so that by the time you get to round 3, the other person's got nothing left. And I thought that Myron Dennis Lost round one, but close. I thought that he scored a lot of significant low kicks. I thought that he did a good job of keeping a good guard, not taking anything really, really big. But Warren Thompson was throwing more legit combinations, power combinations, finishing with low kicks. And Myron Dennis was just looking for low kick counters, built on it. And the next thing you know, get out of round one. He invested some good work in the round one. Round two, low kicks are all his. He had completely hurt the front leg, and it was to the point where Warren Thompson had even bent down and like went down to a knee, but the ref missed it, and he stood back up. Then Myron Dennis started to attack the back leg, and by round three, it was just kind of a Myron working these combinations and kicks, and Warren Thompson just kind of, you know, standing there, throwing in between here and there, but his legs were worn. He was done. I thought that was a good showing by Warren Thompson in defeat. I really thought that he put some good tools together, but I really think that Myron Dennis coming together as a kickboxer, he's got another fight in the tournament, and then the course, it's almost set up where either there's got to be an upset or all roads lead to Myron Dennis and Colette meeting in the final in October. But I thought that was a decent showing by both guys, and I had a lot of fun with the bout. Next fight on the card I'm going to talk about would be the female fighter I mentioned before, Andrea Lee. I actually got to meet Andrea Lee because a fighter of mine's Montana Stewart, before she got her career going when she was just training. Andrea Lee came to train with us, and Montana and Andrea had grappled before. And then when they sparred, it's when I realized just how strong Andrea Lee is. Like, she's like a physically strong, strong girl. Like, she's a power lifter in high school, and like, she's got, you know, big arms, shoulders, thighs, like just a physical specimen. And when she threw, everything was hard, and I thought that she was still her kickboxing flow is, it's a little bit odd. There's no like combination of kick flow to it. It's usually a series of single shots, and then she throws her hands kind of with heat. When I heard that they were doing this card, I was texting or messaging back and forth with Nick Maynard, and he was asking me who I should put on the card or what ideas I had about it. And I just started shooting names, and I said, if you do Shreveport, you got to have Andrea Lee. I was like, she fights in Invicta. I don't know what her contract situation is, but she had a pretty solid resume in amateur kickboxing, and she's a draw in the area. So I really think you should give her a shot. Flash forward to the card coming out, and I see that she's on there. She's going against, she ends up fighting Lindsay Marino. I thought that it showed the toughness of Lindsay Marino, because Andrea Lee was a little bit better in every round in terms of like when she threw, like she threw shots that snapped Lindsay's head back, and she had good solid kicks, good solid single shots. But Lindsay Marino would battle back. She'd combination back. She'd counter back. She just was never able to put enough significant moments into the round. Then Andrea Lee caught her with something big in the early in the third, and Andrea Lee tried to turn it up and go for the KO. And then after about a minute, she didn't get the KO, and she was just absolutely burnt out. Absolutely drained, and Lindsay Marino started to come on strong in the last minute of the round, and clearly I would go Andrea Lee all three rounds because she scored the most significant shots and she had Lindsay Marino in trouble. But man, Marino did such a good job. In the second round, she had some moments. In the first round, she had some moments, but in the last minute of the third round, she really had the fight. Like in terms of like the offense was all in favor of her, so. Good stuff there. Really hoping to see both girls if they do this promotion again. Andrea Lee, I'm not sure who they'd match her up with next, but I do like her as a competent kickboxer at 125 pounds if they can find the right matchups. And she's just a good draw for selling in that area. So if they go back there, she's a good draw. Last fight on the card I'm going to talk about is Francis Ambang as he went against Clint Rhodes. This is the kind of fight that can't happen. This fight was just a KO for Francis Ambang. Clint Rhodes did a good job of hopping in there, but once that thing said he was 45 years old, he walked out there and looked like a guy that was 45 years old. Like, everything about the fight was like, oh, okay, you are that old. And Francis Ambang just kind of went out, scored the low kicks, single low kicks, and then he was able to get the, you know, the KO with the hands in the second round. You know, it's weird. One of my fighters was actually going to fight Francis Ambang, but, you know, meniscus injury put him out. So it's not that Francis Ambang looked for this type of matchup. He looked for, you know, he's looking for tough guys, and he's looking for guys that can push his career. And I thought that this was just kind of a filler, and he wants to be active. So I'm glad that he was able to get in there. I'm glad he was able to get this KO. But Francis Ambang is a guy who, you know, fighting out of Virginia, we want him to get as many kickboxing opportunities as he can. So whether it's, you know, legacy kickboxing, whether it's, you know, lion fight, whatever it is, whatever gives him the opportunity to be more active, I hope he gets those opportunities. Because he really is a talented guy, and he just, you know, the best guys are just a little bit slicker than he is. So he stayed active, and he got the W, and I definitely hope that he can, you know, either get another shot in glory or get something that continues to push his career, because he really is a solid athlete. Gonna go ahead and break into the glory card. It's so funny because as I speak to you, like literally as I start to do this, there are changes being made to this kickboxing card. I was all set to talk to you about, you know, before the show even started, I was excited to talk to you guys about the Johan Kangulo fight as he was gonna go against Kareem Gaji. Then Kareem Gaji was out. And then I was all excited for people to talk about John Cian Larson. Then Larson was out and Chris Basoku was in. And now Chris Basoku is out and Dijime Kalabali is in. So there's so much movement going on. I'm actually, you know, as we speak, watching information change. But I'm going to go ahead and break this card down to the best of my ability and take into effect that changes might happen literally while I'm speaking. Sorry, everyone, if you notice a slight hesitation in this or whatever. As I was doing the podcast, I decided to pause it, and I needed to wait and let some of these changes happen that were going on in the glory card. But I'm going to go ahead and jump into it now because I believe, for the most part, we are set to go. Glory on the undercard, we got a featherweight bout between Thomas Adamopoulos as he takes on the Canadian Shane Oblonsky. I'm pretty sure Shane's Canadian. Oblonsky is a guy, of course, we've seen before. He's fought in Glory Series. He's fought in the undercards. He fought in the American, the four-man tournament that we had back in last year when they had the big eight-man tournament for the middleweights. They had a featherweight tournament, four-man tournament there. Oblonsky was in the tournament. He won his first-round bout. He lost his second-round bout. But he is a veteran that we've had in this game for a while. He's a long guy. He's got, you know, sneaky offense and definitely good push. Adamopoulos is a guy who I've talked about on this show many times, but a few years ago when he was much more active, there's a period of time where he was one of the better smaller weight guys in the world. If you look at, you know, the 60 kgs, guys a little bit closer to that weight. Adamopoulos, when he was, you know, in his prime, he was in some very good fights with, you know, Kareem Benui and so on, when he was at that smaller weight. Featherweight's not that much bigger than what he used to fight at when I thought that he was one of the better fighters in the world. He's still got a lot of big win opportunities, got a lot of opportunities in Japan. I see him as the better kickboxer in total. Like, he's a good complete, got good complete kickboxing, even though he fought mainly full rules Muay Thai in most of the bouts that I've seen him in. The question here is, can he deal with the length of Oblonsky and the size? Because Oblonsky is a naturally bigger guy by the eye test for me. And I think Adamopoulos, I'm going to lean towards him getting a victory in this one. He really is a fun kickboxer to watch. You know, I definitely recommend everybody, if you've never seen Thomas Adamopoulos perform before, go check him out on YouTube. Very, very entertaining fighter to watch. Shane Oblonsky, again, I think this is going to be an entertaining fight no matter what. Two very skilled guys, and I really lean towards the more experienced, and in particular, he's gone against tougher opposition in total in Thomas Adamopoulos. Going to go ahead and move into the next fight. This is one of the changes. I don't think it's fair to him because I don't have enough based off of this small amount of time to see what kind of shape we would get from the replacement. As I was mentioning before, Dijime Kalabali has now been moved into the tournament. He's been replaced on the undercard by Shahir Adamchuk, and Adamchuk is going against Murat Grigoryan, who's one of the better lightweight fighters in the world. It's weird, when they were talking about moving somebody out of the tournament, moving somebody in, my first choice would have been Murat Grigoryan based off of his history. He's gone against a lot better elite level competition. His fight with Robin van Roosmalen was razor thin close. It was very, very close. I've got, of course, Murat Grigoryan win this fight. He's more prepared. It's different style than he would have met with Dijime Kalabali, but I really think that his work rate, the way he walks people down, the way he throws offense, Murat Grigoryan's going to be tough for anybody to win on a kickboxing card. He's just a very, very talented guy who's gone against the elite. You can go back, I mean, you just go throughout his career and you look at some of the names that he's met. This guy's legit. He just hasn't put it together, hasn't had that four-man tournament, hasn't got that big title shot opportunity that has been afforded to the likes of your Andy Sowers and your Georgia Petrosians in the past. His best opportunity would have been in one of the glory tournaments, one of the Showtime tournaments, if I believe correctly, that Robin Van Roosmalen won. But since then, him and his brother, Harat Marat Gagorian, if you get these guys, they're just all action kickboxers that are going to walk you down. So good stuff, and I'm expecting a very entertaining kickboxing match here with Marat Gagorian winning. Going to go ahead and move into the fight with a light heavyweight bout between Murad Buzidi as he takes on Philip Verlinden. Philip Verlinden, of course, has fought all over the place. This guy was in the Super 16-man heavyweight champion tournament that they had for Glory a few years ago, where he lost to Roman Bojanski in the opening round. But his kickboxing is very solid. He takes on Murad Buzidi, also a very solid kickboxer, savvy. Murad Buzidi is like the Glory guy. Like, they call him in short notice, preparation. He is the guy they use the most in Europe. And the way that you look at, like, Brian Collette gets on a lot of the USA undercards. Murad Buzidi gets on a lot of the international undercards. This guy gets a lot of fight opportunities to go out, use his savvy kickboxing. He's gone against so many elite guys from, Badr Hare to, even in this brand. I mean, he was going to fight Pat Barry in his last one before they, switched out one with Dustin Jacoby. But Murad Buzidi is one of the more active kickboxers at 209 pounds in the world. And him going against anybody is going to be a tough, tough go for them. Philip Verlinden, I think, is trying to find a home. Again, very tall, 6'5", uses his length well, very savvy, really tricky kickboxing. He does a lot of good things. The problem is I think he wants to be the best in the world in a weight division. He just hasn't found that weight division. And I thought that if he were fighting at what would be middleweight for Glory, I thought that was probably his best opportunity to go against elite-level guys and have a lot of success. I would like to see how he would do with a Joe Schilling. Unfortunately, in that tournament, he ran into, the current title holder in Philip Verlinden. And there are some other guys who have a more power, sit in the pocket, will throw with him kind of style, like a Simon Marcus, that could give Verlinden trouble. But I still like his skill set and the way it matches up, and the fact that he's not the biggest, puncher. He's not a power guy, doesn't have a lot of pop. I think that his talents hold up best with what he likes to do: use his length, score offense. He dropped Melvin Manhoff in their fight. He is better suited at that weight class. I really think he's better suited at middleweight. So that's why I lean for Murad Buzidi, the bigger, stronger guy, to win this fight. Although, very close, I think Valinden's got the kickboxing to be right there with Buzidi. It's Buzidi's strength. I think that he can land enough offense to keep Verlinden from getting too comfortable and having success against him. I got Murad Buzidi winning this fight. Next fight on the card, and this is another one of the replacements that I was mentioning earlier, and this was the heartbreaker because I'm a big Kareem Gaji guy. Kareem Gaji out, Cedric Dombey in, as he takes on Yoan Kangulo. I've seen Kangulo fight several times. He's actually a very talented guy. I remember being in conversations with Ryan Scully about him, back in the past. I really like his skill set, but sometimes late replacement turn people off to thinking, okay, I don't know what the chances are from this athlete. This for sure is a step-up fight for Cedric Dombey, but he's got a pretty interesting style. There are times where his head movement and the way he avoids kicks, he's very much like Chad Sugden. And then there are times where he's just throwing offense and moving, going after guys and throwing, jumping, spinning stuff, whatever. I really like his offense. Part of me wants to take the risk and say he's going to beat the veteran Kangulo. And I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. I'm going to go ahead and call the upset. Cedric Dombey is going to get an upset victory over Kangulo. This is a huge step up for him. It really is. But he's a good athlete. And he's the kind of guy where if there's an 8-man tournament in the welterweight division, if he can, first I want him to go against Kareem Gaji, on the Glory level and in a Glory promotion. But if he gets that kind of a win, or even this kind of a win, I hope he gets the opportunity to be in that tournament if they go with the 8-man slot. But unfortunately, I really do believe that, welterweight, something that might be sitting up for a while. I'll get into that a little bit later with Joseph Atleti having concussion troubles and having to give the title up. I'll get into that a little bit later. But as far as picking this fight, like I said, I like Yoan Kangulo. He is he's been sitting here. He's been waiting on this fight. He is the pick that makes sense. But I'm going to go ahead and go with the young upstart, Cedric Dombey, and his wide shots. I think he's going to score something significant. The main event of the Super Fight series, or the underfight part, would be Jamal Ben Sadek as he takes on Super Veteran and Freddy Camayo. And I say Super Veteran because Freddy Camayo has fought everybody. Like he has fought in K-1, the highest level. He's fought, fought Ignashoff. He was the first guy, like, Ignashoff had lost before, and Ignashoff was dropped by Badahari, but nobody scored the kind of clean, effective, you know, series of offense of shots that Freddy Camayo had scored on Alexei Ignashoff. Ignashoff got the victory back later on, but, man, Freddy Camayo got victories there. He, you know, Kalinas, I believe he got a victory over him in one of the European Grand Prix tournaments, where he's got that, the guy was coming out all over him, and then he just kept staying in his guard, and he opened up with a big knee scored it down, fought in a couple other K1 tournaments. He is the kind of guy where if you're going to do a kickboxing card in France, the guy who's got the most veteran experience, you know, outside of a Jerome LeBanner, is going to be Freddy Camayo, in particular in the last 10 years. This heavyweight's been all over the place fighting everybody. I really like that they used him. Shout out to them for using Freddy Camayo. And Jamal Ben Sadek, I just need him to show me some skill set again. When he beat Remy Bonjowski, he beat Remy Bonjowski with the low kicks because he was so big and strong, and Remy couldn't do anything to hurt him. In fact, when Remy threw a low kick, Ben Sadek would just catch the low kick and throw him on the ground because he's so big. And here is the situation. He's coming off the suspension because he kicked a guy after the guy, Hezdy Hargis. After he fought Hezdy went down. He, you know, hit Hezdy while Hezdy was on the ground. Clearly, like, done intentional, and he was suspended. This is his first time fighting for the promotion since that happened. That was last year. And I'm looking at him now. He's still a strong dude. He still has some okay tools, but he's never put together his kickboxing. If he can land something with power, he can beat Freddy Camayo. But if you're going to tell me who's going to win a 3-round kickboxing match, I'm going to go with Freddy Camayo. I'm leaning for Freddy Camayo to win this fight. I think he's just the more skilled of the two guys. Even though, I mean, Ben Sadek, I kind of get on him about the Peter Arts loss because I felt like he just kind of came in there throwing, you know, guns blazing, and he got tired and ended up losing. And then you look at the fight with Ben Edwards, same kind of feel to it. Freddy Camayo's not going to get into that kind of fight. Very crafty. He's going to move. He's got, Gokhan said it, Saki said it best. He doesn't really have a fight style. He just keeps doing stuff, you know, just keep throwing different strikes. And Freddy Camayo, I think that sums him up pretty clear. You can't really get a read on him. He's not going to come out combination low kick you. He's not going to come out and counter kick you. He's going to come out and do single strike here, two strikes here, combination here, switch kick here, high kick here. And it just, the pacing of it is just something that's really weird to get a handle on. And nobody's ever really gotten that down. The guys who beat Freddy Camayo are people who just explode with offense on him. They don't wait for him to get off. They don't wait for him to, you know, pick them apart. They just let their hands go, or they land something early, like Ruslan Karev or whatever, and they score something that put him down early. So I think Freddy Camayo is a guy who I want to see more of, and I'm glad that he made it. He's at the end of his career. You know, he's got to be going towards his mid-30s, but I really like him in this bout. We move into the four-man tournament. Four-man tournament, I'm going to go ahead and go with Josh Johnsey versus Jaime Kalabali. This one's simple. I am a big Josh Johnsey fan. I think that he's got all the tools. I think he's the level of athlete, and he's got the kickboxing flow down. Like, he's got the series of combination kicks, combination knees. He's got the Dutch style of fight flow down. But it's not just that he's got that down. He also has the offensive tools, the natural athleticism to have success. And that's the most important part. It's one thing if you go in there and you're playing the Dutch style, but you don't have the, you know, you don't have the KO pop, you don't have the range in your hooks, you don't throw a hook in a way that it can both be a score, and if blocked, it can still turn into a weight shifter and then become a low kick for you. You're just a guy who throws the hook, and the low kick comes afterwards, whether the hook scores significantly or not. Some people, you'll see that a lot. For people who are playing with the Dutch style out there right now, the hook is the thing that they compromise. They get so into the, I'm going to score the low kick afterwards, that the hook comes in soft and the kick comes in hard. Josh Johnsey, he throws it all hard. So everything's coming with heat. Everything's coming with speed. He really has it down in the way like here Robin Van Roosmalen would have it. Robin Van Roosmalen, he ain't playing no games when he throws his cross hook low kick. everything in the combination hurts. Josh Jansen, everything in his combination hurts. Plus, I just love how long he is and those abilities to score stuff in knees. I actually think he's going to stop Jijam Kalabali. Kalabali's a tough guy, tough veteran guy, very skilled. He's got some big wins in his career, but I like Josh Jansen all the way here. And originally, I thought that I was going to be talking about Jansen getting a victory over Larson. And then once Larson was replaced by Christ Basuku, then I was going to talk about Jansen beating him. No matter who of those three guys were coming in, I had Josh Jansen when he's the more talented fighter. They might be more experienced than him, but they're not more talented than he is. Josh Jansen moves on. This one is one that I didn't even have to hesitate on. Sitichai Sinsong Pingnong is going to beat David Kyria. David Kyria did have the head kick and score a significant victory over Sitsong Pinong's teammate. What was that? It was in Glory. He beat Kim in Glory, I want to say, like four years ago now. Kim Sitsong Pingnong was an undersized guy who went up when he fought David Kyria, and then he got caught with that head kick, and then he was down on the cards and was never able to recover. Sitichai has fought well at 154 pounds, 70 kgs. He's fought well. He beat Andy Sauer earlier this year, and he's dropped him with a shot. Now, again, Andy Sauer is, sometimes he's on fire, sometimes he's got those lapses and he loses, but he's still an elite kickboxer and an elite name to have in your resume. And Sitsong Pingnong has him on that resume earlier this year. I think Sitichai wins this one, and I don't think that it is that competitive. I think that it's a one-sided 30-27 victory. So which brings me to who do I think is going to win this fight. I'm really leaning Josh Jansen here, but it's just so tough to go against Sitichai. I think that's a close fight. I think he'd go to an extra round. I don't think it'll be the prettiest thing, especially if Jansen can start scoring some offense. But I do think Sitsong Pyeong, being in that southpaw style, I think he's going to score some sneaky stuff. There are some chances, because if the French judges are not the French judges are not big fans of holding and grinding tactics at all if you're not in full rules Muay Thai. And I've seen them go against Thais because of that in the past. I've seen them have guys on their cards in full rules Muay Thai fights who they weren't active in the clinch. They were just kind of holding. And then all of a sudden the judges started to go against them because they weren't using it for offensive effect. I really believe that despite the history and the amount of fights and the international experience that you get from a guy the level of Sitichai, I think that he has the skill set to win kickboxing matches very clearly, but every once in a while I'll get a feel that, all right, I've got it under control. I'll just go ahead and start to pace. I'll start to get out of here. And I don't want him to be that way. I want him to be the way that he was. He was so mean with his step-up knees when he went against Albert Krauss. I want him to be that guy. So I want to see that type of I want him to be the guy that he was with when he fought against Andy Sauer, like that aggression, the way he scored into the body. I need that sort of offense from him. And I think that Josh Jansen, I know what I'm getting from him. I know he's coming with combinations and kicks and combinations and knees off fight. It's just about who scores the most effective offense. I just think that I've got a small lean towards Sitichai. I think that he's just the better fighter at this stage. And I do think good things for Jansen moving forward. They've got a four-man, eight-man tournament for the 154-pound title, 70-kg title. I think Josh Jansen should be in that tournament. So good stuff here. Three of the guys definitely representing, top 25, top 20 talent in the world. So I really like this tournament. Could go ahead and move into the next fight as Zach Mikasa gets Carlos Brooks. This is going to be Zach Mikasa all the way. And the way that I felt that Raymond Daniels' last fight was kind of a showcase for him to come in and get a KO, I'm not saying that Brooks is, it's impossible for him to win. I'm saying that that was probably the reason why he's on this fight and in this card. They want to see Zach Mikasa score something big, possibly get a KO on this one. So I got Zach Mikasa getting a KO at some period of time. I'll say second round at the latest, but he's going to come out throwing heat. So if Brooks is going to win, he's going to have to use movement. He's going to have to score, or he's going to have to score something in between, or, catch Mikasa with something in the way Mikasa was caught with a head kick in his last Glory bout. We go into the main event. Main event, of course, Rico Verheerven versus Benjamin Adebuyi. I talked about these guys at length before. Rico Verheerven, as you've seen it, those who watched my Shaolin Shen kickboxing documentary, this guy was moved in such a way. The first time I saw him, he was B-class guy, and he had, you know, scored a lot of low kicks and got it down with the low kicks. And then the guy got up, and the guy was able to get out of the fight, you know, got out of the second round, and then he got past the third round. And I was like, okay, so Rico is the guy who's going to be a fighter for the future. And I had interviewed Simon Roots. And when I interviewed Simon Roots said that he thought Rico was really going to be, Rico's 20 at the time, he said he's going to be one of the champs for the future. Rico then got stopped in the fight the next day after that interview, and I was like, okay. So then there'd be win a few, lose a few, and then he had a moment where he lost to Errol Zimmerman. He, you know, lost to him by KO, and then, like, he's talking to his trainer in the back. His trainer was always telling him, you know, as he said, he goes, hey, he said, doesn't matter that we have these faults now. He said, we got to make sure that you're good enough so that when you get there, when you get to the top, you're going to stay at the top. So he kept putting in the work. He kept getting the fights, kept moving his career. He got a rematch against Errol, of who he's fought twice now, and he's gotten, you know, victories over him both times. Despite the lapse that he had against Orizmachuk back in January in China when he had to take the short notice fight for money. Outside of that lapse, I think that Rico Verheerven has performed very well as a heavyweight champion, two victories over Daniel Kita. He is a very talented young star for the future. Enter his opponent, Benjamin Adebuyi, who was originally supposed to be, you know, fighting Anderson Broderick Silva last month. That fight fell through, and then Adebuyi ended up getting this, and there's a little controversy coming from the camp, of course, of Anderson Broderick Silva, who felt they had won that fight, they'd be in this shot. But Benjamin Adebuyi, I've said it many times, he was moved the right way. We're talking about a guy who came up, he goes over to Romania. I mean, he's from, you know, Romania. He's coming up, getting good fights, getting the opportunity to fight in super combat cards. Then he gets, you know, a couple of step-up opportunities. Lost by KO, and then he, you know, comes back, wins the tournament the following year, winning by KO over the guy who stopped him the year before. Benjamin Adebuyi has really put together a solid fight career, very young. I mean, he's not, like, super young in terms of, like, he's in his early 20s or whatever. I think he's going into his prime as far as an athlete and as far as his kickboxing acumen, and I'm excited to see how he does with Rico Verheerven. I'm leaning Rico Verheerven here. I think that Benjamin Adebuyi, I'm back and forth on it because Benjamin Adebuyi, I feel he's got the best KO pop of the two. So if anybody's going to score something significant, the end of the fight is going to come from him. But man, I really, really like Rico Verheerven's kickboxing skill set. He's had a full camp to prepare for this. It wasn't like a short notice deal like the thing that he had in the Kunlun fight with Hruzmachuk. I think that this is just, I got a slight lean, 3-2 in favor of him. Clearly, Adebuyi's got all the talent in the world and all the ability in the world to score a victory over Verheerven, because Verheerven, despite the fact that he hurt Errol Zimmerman pretty bad in the last fight, he's not known for having that kind of KO pop. That's not what his MO is. Like, that's not what he's used to. Whereas Adebuyi's had some pretty good stoppages over some okay level opposition. Verheerven wasn't even stopping the okay level, but he was out kickboxing them for sure. And he's getting better. He's working with boxing coaches. As talented a young star as you're going to get, he's only lacking the KO power. Adebuyi is a talented young star who does have okay KO pop, and I think that that could help him on the cards if he could score down or something at some period of time, because that's what happened with Verheerven in the loss earlier this year. He was dropped twice in the second round. But I just lean towards Rico Verheerven's kickboxing just a little bit more. I really think that he's a talented guy. I think that this is going to be an entertaining fight. And it's a fight for the future, because those of us who have been kickboxing fans for a while, and those of you who are new to kickboxing, it's very important that I tell you guys that this is a sport, and I wrote the story in Liver Kick like last year. It's a sport, 2 years ago now, it's a sport about rematches. We want to know what happens to Verheerven and Adebuyi after they fought 4 or 5 times in 5 years. You know, that's kind of how we know. You go back and look at Peter Arts. How many times did he go against Andy Hook? How many times did he go against Ernesto Hoost? That's kind of what it is in our sport. We're not you stay undefeated and you hold the title. That's not what our game is. We're never going to be that kind of sport. We are the best going against the best on a regular basis. That's who we are. That's why the Glory Tournament is supposed to be, the idea of it is supposed to kind of go off of what we had in K1. K1, every year people were excited, who's going to be the best 70 kgs in the world? Is it going to be Masato this year? Is it going to be Andy Sauer this year? K1, who's going to be the best? Is it going to be Rembojowski again? Is it going to be Badahari? Is anybody going to stop Semi Shell? Those are all part of what makes kickboxing great. It's the who's going to win the title for the year this year. Having a single title means that we don't have that same feel, but we should still get that same amount of matchmaking. Because if Vahirin beats Adebuwe, I don't want them to feel obligated to only have Vahirin fight new guys. I want them to either have tournaments, or I want them to have the opportunity for us to see Adebuwe fight Vahirin again if he wins a couple fights. So, good stuff. Good card. I think it's going to be entertaining. I'm glad it's in France. I'm glad it's going to be live. Clearly, it's going to be, you know, the only thing I felt that they got wrong was that this is on Friday instead of Saturday. If this was on Saturday, it would have been perfect. Saturday in the middle of the afternoon, people off work, it worked out really well. People are working when this comes on. I'm hoping they replay it at night, but people will clearly be at work when this comes on. So that's kind of my big problem with the timing of the card. The idea of it being live and the idea of it being on Spike in the afternoon is absolutely wonderful. That's what I'm doing. I'm working with my fighters. I've got fighters who've got fights coming up. Just got news on my heavyweight getting about possibly coming up in the UFC. So, like, I'm busy during the day. So my afternoon is going to be filled with glory. And then I come back at night and work with somebody else, all excited and pumped up from watching kickboxing. So super excited about that. Super excited about this opportunity to see elite level kickboxing in the middle of the afternoon. I just wish they had it on Saturday and not Friday as far as for the ratings of the brand. And I'm assuming that maybe they'll replay this Friday night, which makes the most sense that they would, you know, go ahead and take out another time slot for people who didn't see it during the work hours. Going to go ahead and wrap the show up on a couple of notes. I mentioned it before. Tough news coming from Joseph Antolini, who has to relinquish, the title of best fighter in the world at, 77 kgs. And he is struggling with concussions. A friend of mine, TJ Grant, he struggled with concussions, had him out for 2 years. He's trying to work his way back into the game now. And it's weird, he got his concussion in grappling, in jiu-jitsu. You know, he took a knee when he was grappling, I believe, and that kind of left him, feeling bad. And, like, he started to see spots when he was driving and blackouts. And people have no idea how scary it is. You know, concussions are no joke. And in your mind, you're like, oh, I saw some people say, they're ducking, clearly Joseph Antolini's ducking Nicky Holtzkin. Why? He was in an awesome competitive fight with him before. He wants to be considered the best in the world. Right now, he's the title holder. He's not the best in the world. And that's kind of what we're thinking about when you look at a situation with, even in MMA right now, the big thing is with Jon Jones kind of out, Cormier is the champion, but he's not the best in the world. And you got to beat the guy who's considered the best in the world. And that's kind of the thing I think Joseph Antolini really wants another shot at. It's not like he's getting blown out and he got stopped. He was in a competitive match in which he scored a lot of low kicks. And then the work of Nicky Holtzkin built up and was able to, get him out of there late in the third round. So ideally, he has nothing to be ashamed of as far as how he performed and how he worked. I really think that he will get himself back as soon as he can, but he's got to take care of himself first. And Nicky Holtzkin, who should have the title because he won the tournament, he should get the opportunity to fight somebody. Go ahead and find somebody at 70 kgs. I don't know who they want to do. Might end up doing Raymond Daniels again, but I think it should be someone else. But, make him, get him, Artur Kashenko or something like that. Fight for the title, and you've got, your title holder, and then they can fight Joseph Antolini when he comes back. But it's a scary thing dealing with concussions, and I'm glad that Antolini is just knocking it out, taking the time, knocking it out, and coming back 100%. Other than that, I just want to thank everybody for bearing with me on this kickboxing podcast. This week, I knew it was going to be tougher because, like I said, I was trying to have my co-host on, but I'm actually glad it didn't work out that way because we would have broke down some fights that wouldn't have even happened in the card because of the changes today. And these are weigh-in changes. Chris Basuku was at the weigh-in, weighed in, standing there in his underwear in the pictures with everybody else, and suddenly somehow he's not able to fight. So the fact that we, got another replacement, we got some undercard replacements, it happens in the sport, and I think Glory did a good job putting the card together despite all this. So pretty excited about it, pretty excited about the action on Friday, and I hope that everyone has a good time and really enjoys and supports the kickboxing brand. Hit up liverkick.com because they have a way of you watching the Super Fight series. They've got the stream up there. Also go to Glory Series for the kickboxing stream at their site. So thanks everybody for supporting kickboxing. Thank you for listening to my podcast show, and have a good weekend. Peace.